Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 13. We are going to be going over the Nashville game, the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup round of 16 tie. Inter-Miami did win that game 3-1, so they're advancing to the quarterfinals. We'll spend a little bit of time at the end talking about Monterrey and what that means for the rest of this tournament. But let's start with some roster moves. But before all of that, I'm your host, Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. How are you feeling today, man?
I'm feeling good. I'll be honest, I like the post-game reviews a lot better than the pre-game shows because the pre-game shows are very nervy. And the post-game show, especially when you won the game, are pretty chill, and I enjoy that. And 3-1, man, moving on to the quarterfinals, you can't expect anything more. Great victory, great game, so let's get straight into it.
Yeah, I agree. I think especially when you're having a sort of really important do-or-die type game like Wednesday nights was, the pregame show can be pretty nervy. And yes, it's a lot more fun to do a post-game show when you win those games. But before we get into that game, there's been some news over the last 24 hours regarding the roster, and I figured we can just talk about it and get it out of the way. First, it sounds like earlier today, Inter-Miami, Boca Juniors, and Marcelo Wiegandt, who I think everyone calls Chelo, kind of came to an agreement to have that player join Inter-Miami this season. He signed an extension with Boca, and so he'll be coming on loan from Boca to Inter-Miami in the next couple days, and hopefully he'll be available, maybe not next weekend, but the game after that. So Inter-Miami gets the right back. This was the guy that, since they traded Yedlin, this was the first name we heard. It seems like this is the guy they really wanted. He's the player that Inter-Miami spent the most time with. You know, I know we heard some other names, but it felt like this is the guy they wanted once they traded Yedlin and once they decided they needed to bring in another right back. What are your thoughts?
This position was imperative. We needed to bring a right back in as soon as possible. And the fact that we're getting our first choice right back is a big, big deal. I know both of us have looked at some of the video clips of him. Of course, highlights aren't necessarily the great package to see what a player is exactly like. But from what I've seen, I like him. I think he is very strong defensively, physical player, offers a lot of offensive output as well. I think he'll be good both in a 4-3-3 and a 3-5-2. So I'm excited by the chance of by the prospect of having a right back again in this team and not having to rely solely on the 3-5-2. And I'd just like to give a shout out to Chris Henderson here, because I know it's been a hard trying to get Boca to agree to this deal, and it seems like they've come up with a really good agreement. I think it's a one-year loan with a potential for a second year as well. And he's signing a long-term contract with Boca as well. So all parties seem to be satisfied with the outcome. But yeah, I think overall a fantastic, fantastic pickup. And hopefully he can hit the ground running. We're not going to see him tomorrow, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, I do feel a little bad for Chelo because he was set to become a free agent this summer. And there's certainly benefits to being a free agent in terms of having control over your future. And certainly there's some financial benefits to not having a transfer fee attached to you when a new team tries to pick you up. So it's, I think for him and his personal situation, it's disappointing to have to sign this contract extension, but in exchange, he's going to be able to play with Lionel Messi. And I'm sure that's a dream for him. And he is from Argentina. So, I mean, no doubt this is a move he really wanted to make happen. And he was so interested in doing that, that he was willing to sign that contract extension with Boca in order to make it happen. He comes to Inter-Miami on a one-year loan. There is an option, like you said, to add a second year to that. But I'm sure as far as Inter-Miami is concerned, they're not even going to think about that until December. what are your thoughts of him as a player? I know, you know, we've only looked at some of the analytics, some of the stats, and just, you know, some highlight videos, which don't tell you too much, but this is the guy they wanted. And I don't know, can you see why this is the guy they wanted?
Dare I say he might even be an upgrade on Yedlin. We were speaking about this, and he may not be as explosive as Yedlin or as pacey, but he's definitely not one who's short on pace. All highlights that I've seen of him, he seems to keep up with his attackers. I think more than anything, the reason he fits so well into this team is because he has a decent output both defensively and offensively. And that's going to go a long way for this particular team. I think for us, one thing that we're missing in our backline is the pace. I know Jordi Alba is, you know, decent, but he's not, you know, nearly as explosive as someone like Yedlin. And having a quick right back, a physical right back, is really going to help build this backline into an even stronger defensive setup. So I'm excited to see how he fits in. Again, not going to put too much pressure on him, give him time to settle in, but he's going to have to slot in very quickly and get adjusted to the MLS very quickly, which I'm not concerned about. But yeah, hopefully we get to see him soon.
Yeah, he's coming from the Argentine League with Boca Juniors. And I think being there is going to have demanded more from him in terms of structural integrity, being smart defensively, and then being able to provide offensively. And so, yes, Yedlin was a more athletic and explosive player, and he had the physical tools that maybe Wigan doesn't have, but he wasn't always great on 1v1 defending. He wasn't always great being structurally sound in a defense and in a back line. And then, of course, in the final third, you know, he didn't have a great cross. He wasn't a goal threat. So I do think in both offensively and defensively, this is going to be at least somewhat of an upgrade. And I think most importantly, it's going to give a right back option for Tata Martino that he wanted and he feels comfortable with. And it's going to allow this team to play structures and formations that rely on that right back that we haven't been able to do for the last 2 weeks since we traded Yedlin.
He has a thought as well. And I think we're going to get into this later on. But since Yedlin's left, has the 3-5-2 looked better to you? And I'm not saying it's because of Yedlin, but it just seems like there seems to have been a bit of a structural tweak. And I do think that we were looking at Chelo specifically for his profile, both in the 3-5-2 and the 4-3-3. And I'd like to see firsthand how he's able to adjust to those two formations and whether he's defensively as smart and intellectual in playing in different formations, because that's something that you can't necessarily see from highlights. So
yeah, I think you bring up a good point, because I've been focused on this addition as it gives us the opportunity to play in a back four again, which we haven't had since we traded Yedlin. But just based on some of the analytics and some of his output, I would imagine he would be comfortable switching to a wing back role relatively seamlessly. So I imagine he'll be a solid player in both formations. But I think when we do play a 3-5-2 and we're using those wing backs, you have the ability to use a Robert Taylor, Julian Gressel, or maybe Benjamin Kermaski or David Ruiz. So there's more options when you have it as a wing back. So it wasn't quite as urgent of a need, but I would be very happy if he came in and demanded to play every game because his play was so good. That a deal hasn't become official yet, but it sounds like it's going to happen in the next 24, 48 hours. Maybe by the time Miami comes back from their DC trip, he'll be with the team. Okay, so that's one right back in. Let's talk about one right back out. A couple hours ago, maybe about an hour and a half ago, Inter Miami announced that it has mutually agreed to part ways with Harvey Neville. Give me your top line thoughts, and then I'll go a little deeper on Neville, because I'm sure I have a little bit more to say than you.
This was one that we were expecting to happen anyways. We were just waiting to see what's going to be the outcome for Harvey Neville, whether he gets switched to the second team, whether he gets bought out for his contract. And yeah, it seems like they've terminated his contract. And he is a MLS caliber player, but with the kind of talent that we have coming up from our academy and with the kind of players that we currently have in this squad, I didn't see Harvey Neville getting much game time. And honestly, he was just using up a space that we can potentially utilize to bring someone like Yannick Bright up. So I think this is one of those moves that we'll see. We've been following and hoping this would come through so that it frees up space on the roster. And this was an expected move. And as always, I think he can go on to an MLS team and really show some of his talents that he has. And here's wishing him the best of luck.
Yeah, so for those that aren't that familiar, Harvey was signed in the end of 2022. He made a few appearances, and then last season, at the beginning of the year, he was sort of coming off the bench. He was the understudy to DeAndre Yedlin. Yedlin played as more minutes than any other outfield player for Inter Miami last season. So even in the beginning of the season, he was getting 5-8 minute cameos and maybe a start or two, or maybe just an open cup start. So he wasn't playing that much, but he was getting game time. But as soon as Phil Neville was fired, Harvey Neville didn't see the field again. And in fact, I think that first game after Javier Morales took over, Harvey Neville wasn't even on the bench. So it felt like almost immediately there was sort of a disconnect between the team and that player. He was, unfortunately, some of the fans took out their frustration on Phil when they sort of interacted with Harvey. He got booed a few times last season, and he didn't deserve that. So I don't know if his experience at Inter Miami was great, and maybe that part of that was because of Phil's standing and not necessarily what he was doing on the field. He's not the most athletic of a fullback, but he does have a nice cross. So there's a player there, but he's 20, 21. He needs to be playing minutes if he's going to live up to his potential. And that wasn't going to happen on this team. Even if he remained on the roster, this is a team that's trying to win. They're not going to give substantial minutes to a player that they don't feel is actively contributing to that. So for his future, you know, I do think, you know, he could be an MLS backup, but I think maybe we'll see him drop down a level to the USL and maybe get, 2,000 minutes this season, trying to improve as a player. And then, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, we'll see him in the MLS as a backup or a guy that gets significant minutes, but maybe not on a team trying to win a title. So no hate for Harvey Neville on this podcast. We wish him the best. He's he's definitely a professional level player. And so we will be rooting for him moving forward. But, and here's my surprise that I teased to Soar before the show, that brings this roster down to 27. In order to get to compliance for opening day, they would have had to move one of their young players on loan to the second team. And so for those that don't know, you're allowed to do that with one player, and then he just doesn't count against the roster. The club hasn't announced that yet, but they would have had to do that to be compliant for opening day. That could have been Tyler Hall. It could have been Santiago Morales. I'm guessing it was Felipe Valencia. So if we just assume that he's now on loan with the second team and ineligible for the first team this season, that brings the roster down to 27. If you add Marcelo Wiegand, that makes it 28. If you add Matias Rojas, who sounds like he's figuring out his situation with the Corinthians, but he's going to join Inter Miami soon, that takes it to 29, which means you now have one spot available to sign your first pick in the draft, Yannick Bright, who is a player that we have both been waiting for this team to sign because we really liked what we saw in the preseason. Wiegand in, Matias Rojas in, you add Yannick Bright to this midfield, which is already incredibly deep with guys that we really like. And this roster is really shaping up to be what I think it's going to be for the first, until the summer window. So how are you feeling about how this roster is looking and, how excited are you to see Bright? And, you know, it looks like we might be done with transactions for the foreseeable future if all of this does come together.
Yeah, I think it feels like it's all finally coming towards a head and it all just seems to be falling into place. Yannick Bright, man, I've been waiting to see him play. I think that is one player who's going to really have an impact on this team. And there seems to be always something missing in the midfield setup, in the midfield chemistry. Before Redondo came in, there were a lot of questions about this midfield, whether it was athletic enough, whether it could cope with pace in the middle. And with Redondo, some of those questions have been answered, but I still think there's room for improvement. And Yannick Bright is definitely one of those players who I think can change or plug some of the issues that we might have going into the season. So very excited to see him. Hopefully Tata gives him a run out a fair few times and he gets the minutes that he deserves, because we've got so many midfielders, as you said. Like, this team is not for the lack of midfielders, and sometimes I wonder whether there are too many midfielders for our own good, but you know what, it's a long season. There are going to be some injuries. We're going to have some issues. There are going to be international games that are going to take players away as well. So it's good to have that level of depth. And all of these players are very versatile, so we can play them in different positions. So it's good to have those options. And I think the 30 that we have now with Bright coming in and Matias Rojas coming in and Chelo coming in, it looks fantastic. And it can compete for any trophy. So very happy with that.
Yeah, I agree. It's very deep. It's very exciting. You know, just to read off some of the names that I think we both feel good about, you've got Busquets, Redondo, Julian Gressel, Diego Gomez, Benjamin Kramaski coming back from injury, David Ruiz, Yannick Bright, you know, Lawson Sunderland, throw him in there. Ian Frey can play a little midfield. So this is a team that's in the midfield. You couldn't ask for a better situation, especially because a lot of those guys are young and not taking up significant cap charges. We're going to get our first look at it next weekend when we play the Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena, because Redondo is going to be away. Diego Gomez probably will be away, I would assume. So we're looking at Busquets and maybe Yannick Bright's in the starting lineup for that game. Julian Gressel and, you know, David Ruiz. There's some options, but we're going to get that tested, you know, next weekend. So we don't have to wait 6 months for that. But of course, you know, Copa America and all that, we'll need the depth. Okay, let's get to the game, because that's what this podcast is really about. We haven't talked about this this game yet, so let's just jump into it. What were your thoughts about the lineup? And talk to me about your pregame nerves. I know we mentioned at the beginning, but I was certainly more nervous for this game than I had been in a while.
Yeah, for those of us who joined us in that pregame review, you would have noticed that I was a little bit conservative about Nashville. I was more on the skeptical side. I expected this game to be an absolute grind. Scotty actually predicted that this would go to penalties. So we both had our reservations. We both knew that this would be a battle and a half. And we were so wrong, man. Maybe we don't have any ball knowledge, because that game could not have gone any better or not have started any better. Honestly, when I saw the lineup, you got the lineup spot on. I wanted Alan to play in instead of Christophe, but it was very similar. We both predicted the 3-5-2 because that was the only formation that Tata Martino could have played. That made me very nervous because the 3-5-2 hasn't always been our greatest strength. It's looked better in the last couple of games. I thought it looked better against Montreal, even though we lost that game. But I was still concerned because Nashville came out firing in that first tie and they scored two goals out of the blue. And thankfully, we were able to answer back then. And I was nervous that that would be the start to this game as well. And I thought Nashville would come up starting that game very feisty and with a lot of intensity. But my goodness, was I wrong. We knew that the first goal would be very crucial and that would change the momentum. And who else but Luis Suarez, man, he's answered his critics in every way possible. I think he's been absolutely magnificent in these last few games. And I'm sure we're going to talk about him more. But I think that first goal changed the complexion of how the game could have potentially gone for Miami, because Nashville was dangerous at times. But there wasn't a moment where I was too concerned after the two goals were scored. I think we were mostly in control throughout the game and it went as I would have wanted it to go. So no complaints. We're going to dissect it further when we talk about it. But I think top line comments were great victory. On to the next round, because it just gets better and better from here.
Yeah, we will talk about the next round at the end of this show. But just going back to pregame, I think it's funny because in the first game, I sort of predicted that Inter Miami would get a dream result. I thought they would get a fast start. I thought they would get two goals in the first half and they would sort of cruise to a 2-0 victory. And in this game, I thought it would be very close and it was going to penalties. And it turned out the opposite, where in the first game, it was very close and they finished with a draw. And then this game, Inter Miami gets the dream start and kind of rides that all the way to victory. Let's get into the big moments. And it started really quickly. In the 8th minute, Inter Miami opens the scoring. Luis Suarez with the goal in between the legs of Joe Willis. He gets the nutmeg goal. And he sort of punks Lucas McNaughton on the way. Lionel Messi with the assist. He sort of puts the ball in Suarez does a dummy to let Messi get the ball, and then Messi finds him on the pick and roll. Thoughts on this goal and getting that early start? I mean, I know we mentioned that it was crucial, but you know, how good did you feel to get that early goal?
That was all Suarez from start to finish. I think the way he moved on that particular goal, his dummy, McNaughton was left to fend for himself. Like, Suarez baited him into coming deeper and then just quickly turned away with that dummy and created space for himself in behind the defenders. And this was like vintage Suarez back when he was at Liverpool. I think he created the space for himself. He ran into that space and great finish from the outside of his foot. Nutmeg the keeper, absolutely brilliant start. And I think the team itself looked very fresh, very sharp to begin with. And that was just something that I think Nashville was not ready for. So kudos to Suarez, just continuing his fine form.
Yeah, let's move on to the next goal. It comes in the 23rd minute. Diego Gomez drives at the defense. He sort of fakes a pass, pushes the ball up, and then attracts sort of all of the defenders inside the box, somehow finds an avenue to get the ball to Lionel Messi at the top of the box, and then Lionel Messi wasn't going to miss from there. So Inter Miami, 23rd minute, goes up 2-0, and this is the dream start that I thought we were going to get in the first game, but I was certainly happy to get in this game.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about Diego Gomez right now because I know we want to dedicate a section to him. So all I'm going to say is fantastic work by him. He's an absolute beast. But every time Messi is in that position and you give him the ball in that position, he's a goal-scoring threat. Like, he will, 9 out of 10 times, he'll put the ball in the back of the net. So I was very surprised by how deep Nashville was playing on that particular play. And after the first goal was scored, I would have expected them to come out a little bit more because they had to go on and score two goals now to actually get something out of this game. So I was surprised that they were sitting back, and practically five of the Nashville defenders were all in the box, and it was very congested. So for Messi to get that shot off and for Gomez to get that ball to Messi, great work. And as I said earlier, the team looks so sharp. The chemistry is really flowing, and that's absolutely wonderful to see at this early point in the season.
Yeah, definitely. I did feel like there was a little bit of a momentum shift after about the 30th, 35th minute, where Nashville sort of got in the game. They created a few chances. They created a nice chance in the 13th minute, I believe, but I think it was offsides in the end. But there were some early warning signs that Nashville did come to not just fold like we saw against Orlando City a couple weeks ago. The big moment I highlighted was in the 45th minute. Daniel Lovitz gets a nice shot. It's sort of a rebound, and he fires it at goal. It bounces off the goalpost and out, but that was a nervy moment, and I'm not sure Drake Callender was very confident until he saw it bounce away.
Yeah, I was surprised Nashville didn't go into that half with at least a goal back. I think they got into their groove after the second goal, and they were threatening quite a bit, but well done for the defense to stay strong, and thankfully we didn't concede and the crossbar came to our assistance. But enter the second half.
Yeah, enter the second half, and the first big moment happens in the 50th minute, and it's Lionel Messi walking off the pitch and Robert Taylor coming on. We'll talk about both of those players more, so I'll just mention it as a segue into the 63rd minute, where Luis Suarez has a nice cross to Robert Taylor, who sort of floats in the air and then heads it in. Unlike over the weekend where he heads it straight at the goalkeeper, this time he finds the corner. Miami goes up 3-0. And all of a sudden, you know, Nashville felt like they had some opportunities, felt like maybe they were creating something. And all of a sudden you get that third goal, the crucial goal, the goal that makes it not scary anymore. And Inter Miami's, you know, feeling good.
Yeah, Robert Taylor answered his critics over the weekend. I think there were a lot of doubts about his finishing capabilities because he missed three clear chances in that game against Montreal. But I think the goal that he scored was practically a carbon copy of one of his chances from Montreal game. And what a fantastic header. Of course, the ball was great, but the header was fantastic as well. So well deserved to him. And I'm glad he came back from that Montreal game.
Yeah, Robert Taylor scored his 14th. That was his 14th goal for Inter Miami, and I don't think he's had a header yet. He's had some really nice, get the ball on his right foot and fire, especially from distance. But that one was almost as beautiful just because of the quality of the header. Moving forward a few more minutes, Diego Gomez, and I really wanted to highlight this play because I was really impressed. Diego Gomez makes a really nice run down the sidelines, sort of in and out of the in and around the defenders, passes it off, gets the ball passed forward to him, continues with the run, and makes a really nice cross and to Luis Suarez. Luis Suarez shoots on the first touch. It gets a really nice save by Joe Willis, but that was the sort of precision that we had talked about and I had mentioned a lot, especially in the preseason and last season, where it felt like the next step in his game to really become a dominant player is to be precise in the final third, to make those really key passes and to, you know, shoot it on target. He also had a shot in the first half from distance that required a Joe Willis save. So really two nice moments, but especially that run and pass from Diego Gomez that I really liked and wanted to highlight.
Yeah, I think there's a different dimension to his game that we saw in this particular game against Nashville. We'll talk more about why that was the reason, but I think he was just a lot more confident with the ball in his feet. And I wonder if Tata had given him the license to just go forward and, you know, venture on with the ball and try to take on defenders, because he did that a fair few times in this game. So and was successful at it. Unfortunately, Suarez wasn't able to cap that off with a goal, but yeah, Gomez was an absolute beast in this game.
Yeah, and you know, like you mentioned, we'll talk about him more individually in a few minutes, but that was in the 69th minute. In the 80th minute, Hani Mukhtar scores, and it felt like this was coming for Nashville. I mean, they had created enough opportunities to deserve a goal, but it was called offsides. At that point, I thought Nashville might kind of give up because they're one, you know, all this effort to get the goal, and then it just gets called offsides, especially that late in the game, I felt like was crushing. But they do score a goal that counted in the 93rd minute right before the game ended. Shaq Moore sort of slipped between Noah Allen and David Ruiz on that right side and then slapped it across the goal to Sam Surge, who pokes it in. So final score 3-1, but their goal came in the 93rd minute. You know, outside of the first 7 minutes, it never really felt like Inter Miami was in danger in this game. Great performance. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes too, but anything on that last goal that you want to talk about? Because I'm not sure we'll get back to that.
What a shame. What a shame that we weren't able to keep that clean sheet, because I think Callender deserved it and the performance deserved it. Nashville wasn't bad. You're right. The goal was definitely coming in, and I expected them to actually score earlier, which I was surprised that they didn't. And I'm not sure why the Hani Mukhtar goal was called offside. I would have liked to see a more... I don't know why they don't show the VAR decisions as they're happening and only show it once the decision has been made. But again, VAR did what VAR does. And that last goal was a little bit of a dampener on an otherwise fantastic game. So,
yeah, I agree. I think Callender getting that clean sheet would have been really nice. Before we talk about Miami's performance, let's just talk about Nashville for a few minutes, because this was a really intense game a week ago when they played in the first leg. We were talking about how this was sort of this rivalry between the two teams. They played a lot of big games against each other. Lucas McNaughton was sort of becoming a big celebrity among Nashville fans because of his nonchalance regarding that tackle slash not tackle against Messi in the first game. What did you think of their performance, and what did you think of their, like, how they came out in this game?
I've thought a lot about this, and I tried to analyze why Miami was able to do what Miami was able to do. And by no means was Nashville bad during this game. I think they had a decent game. As we've already said a couple of times, there were instances where they were very threatening. They hit the post once. They had a couple of offside goals. They finally scored in the 93rd minute. But I think throughout the 90 minutes, it was just a difference in quality. I think Inter Miami just played at a completely different level than Nashville. Tactically, in terms of quality on the ball, in terms of positioning, the first goal was pure class by Luis Suarez. I don't think any defender could have done much against him on that play. McNaughton did what he was supposed to. He followed Luis Suarez to the ball and then just got completely turned. The second goal, again, quality by Gomez, quality by Messi in the box. I think overall, Miami was just the better team on the day. And Nashville fans will just have to agree with that. I don't think there was anything more to it other than Miami just was the better team.
I don't know about that because they brought out the same game plan that worked for them last week in Nashville, where they had Sam Surge on the bench and they went with sort of just relying on Jacob Schaffelberg and Tyler Boyd and a little bit from Shaq Moore, but really, and Hany Mukhtar to be their offense. And then they were just planning on being solid defensively. And I think in the end, that was a mistake. I think they should have tried to play more aggressively. I think they should have started Sam Surge for two reasons. One, they had Sam Surge back. I felt like they knew they were going to need a goal in this game because a draw wasn't going to help them. And Surge playing in front of those front three was going to give them more structure and a better opportunity to score. And I think once he came on the second half, that's exactly what happened. And then the second part of that was Walker Zimmerman, who is their best defensive player and, you know, their best player outside of Hany Mukhtar. He wasn't available for this game. So I don't think they could have relied on being as sound defensively. And I didn't want to give Walker Zimmerman too much credit because I still thought that they were going to be sound defensively, but they came out with a back three, two of their back three were fullbacks. So they were playing with one true center back in McNaughton, which I understand because Zimmerman and Mayer were both out of this game and unavailable, but they just didn't seem like they were going to play well structured defensively. And that's sort of their calling card. And so if they're not going to do that, I felt like they needed to have a more offensive game plan, and they just didn't. They sort of relied on what they did in the first game, at least in that first half. That's what they were relying on.
Yeah, but I think another aspect of that is the fact that Miami scored first so quickly, and that really changes the mindset and the way you approach the game, because the first aspect was the fact that that Miami had two goals to the good on the wayside, so we were already at an advantage there. So you don't want to come out too offensive in that sense and leave yourself exposed to the back. And I think you're right. Nashville came in with the same game plan of trying to defend resolutely and then catch Miami on the counter. But the fact that we scored first really changed their attitude towards the game and their tactics towards the game. And I think that took the breath out of them significantly to begin with. Maybe it could have been a completely different game if Nashville had scored first and we would be talking about how good their tactics were there. But yeah, I think there are a few considerations, a Zimmerman missing, but also us scoring first, I think really changed that game.
Yeah, well, I guess that was sort of my point about Zimmerman is I don't know if we score both of those goals if Zimmerman's in, because they would be playing presumably in a back four. And so those lanes might not have been available in the way that they were. I don't want to take anything away from Suarez and Messi or Diego Gomez because they played it exactly like they needed to in order to create those opportunities. But I think we actually got a little lucky that they didn't have Zimmerman because it sort of changed their whole defensive structure and we were able to take advantage of it. I also think it's ironic that we have complained so much about switching from a back four to a back three and how it causes our defense to leak goals. So it wasn't lost on me that they, when they did that, they had the same problem. So I thought it was worth noting, and the Walker Zimmerman absence I thought was big.
We were missing Alba in that first game. So maybe that could have changed the game in the first try. So you know what? We dealt with what was put in front of us, and that's all you can expect from the game.
Yeah, no doubt we deserve to win the game, for sure, and the tie, because I think in some aspects we were the better team in the first game, too. I think one of the things that I noticed right away was that this team, meaning Inter Miami, was ready to go for this game. Messi was looking athletic, he was looking fast. Suarez was also, I mean, by his standards, Toto Aviles looked really focused, and I thought for the first 25 minutes he played really well. But just throughout the team, the midfield was dialed in. We didn't see any basic silly turnovers from Sergio Busquets, which was nice to see. This team felt like they were really dialed in and ready for this game. And I want to talk about the team readiness and how you felt about that.
Yeah, I've already said the word sharp a couple of times in this podcast. And that's exactly what, like, my notes say, crisp, sharp passing, players looked fresh, which is surprising because we just played against Montreal. And the one criticism for this team has been, do we have the legs to play games midweek and games over the weekend? And this team just looked ready, as you said. I think I can't point a single player who I would fault at being like, he wasn't up for it as much or he didn't show up too much. Of course, there were a few mistakes here and there. I think we didn't maintain the intensity throughout the 90 because in the latter half of the first half, we kind of allowed them to get some of the initiative and allowed them to control the game a bit more. But throughout the course of the 90, over the course of the game, I think all players showed up and they looked sharp, they looked fresh, and they did what they were supposed to. Even our one-touch passing was going to the right spots. A lot of the times what has happened previously is Busquets is trying to play it into a area, expecting someone else to run into it, and then it's just a turnover, or, you know, it gets defended. This time it just seemed like everyone else was on the same page. They knew where to be. They were moving into the open spaces. It was a lot of pass and go. The first goal itself, like, of course, it's Messi and Suarez, so they have that chemistry for a very long time. But that was a perfect example of everyone knew where to go and where to put the ball. And yeah, it just seemed like this team was playing at a completely different level for at least the first 25 minutes. And that's what got us the first two goals.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. There was a, you know, focus and sharpness that was really good to see. And maybe we'll come back to that topic when we go into what this team can do moving forward in this tournament later on. One of the other, you know, the other person that I felt was really sharp and on top of his game tonight was Tata Martino. I want to go over the formation and some of the tactical adjustments they made for this game. But before that, let's talk about the substitutes. When Lionel Messi came off, I actually was, you know, thinking maybe they should have brought Campana on instead of Robert Taylor because the team was really struggling for possession and Leo Campana can hold the ball up. He can help the team advance. And so I felt in that regard, it might be really helpful to have a Campana and also a guy you can pass the ball deep to. And if you need to get out of trouble, he puts on Robert Taylor instead, which I think is fine because Robert Taylor deserves minutes, but he was absolutely right because Robert Taylor delivers with the goal. I think we got the second sub was Allen for Christoph. And then later we got Campana and David Ruiz in the game. Yeah. I think he did the substitutes really well. I think it was well-timed. I know the Messi one came earlier than we would have wanted, but the impact was exactly what we could have wanted.
Yeah, it just felt like everything was going according to plan in this game, which rarely happens in football. Of course, like, I don't think David Ruiz... Yes. Yes. I don't think David Ruiz had as much of an impact in this game as I would have liked him to. He was playing left back, right, when he came on?
Sort of a left wing back, yeah.
Yeah.
No. He was in the midfield.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't notice.
He came on for Diego Gomez.
Okay.
He replaced Diego Gomez.
Fair. Because I saw him marking Shaq Moore on that goal that Sarit scored.
Yeah.
So that's why I was wondering where he was playing. But I think by that point in the game, it was already done and dusted. We knew what the result was going to be. So you can't fault them for that too much. But yeah, the subs were spot on. And that third goal was super important. Let's not take anything away from Taylor. I know we were 2-0 up, but that's the most dangerous scoreline in football/soccer. So yeah, like, scoring that third goal really changed stuff in our perspective, in our favor, and, you know, just assured us that we can now relax and sit back a bit. But yeah, well done to Tata Martino. But talk to me more about the formation, though. Do you think the 3-5-2 is starting to look good? And dare I say, I don't want to jinx it, the players are starting to play better in this 3-5-2.
I have a thought about this formation that I'm going to get to before that I get to that, because I think the biggest tactical adjustment I noticed really early on in this game was that the two wingbacks, Alba and Gressel, were playing a lot deeper than they have over the first or the last two games where we were in this 3-5-2, and also what we saw in the preseason where our wingbacks were getting really high where they weren't a part of the defense really. And so if you're going to have, especially Julian Gressel, who isn't athletic enough to get up and down that side of the field, you need to rely on your defense more, your back three more. And it's not really a back five, it's a back three. I think in this game, they made a conscious adjustment for Alba and Gressel to play a lot deeper than they have, especially Julian Gressel, where, you know, it makes sense because he wanted to guard that side where Schaffelberg had so much success in the first game. But I think they made a conscious decision to play as a more of a 5-3-2 than a 3-5-2. And it made the defense look better and less open to opportunities. To answer your question. No, go ahead. And then I'll answer after. Go ahead.
No, just a point about Gressel there. I think he had a quietly really good game. He didn't have much of an offensive contribution in this game. And I think that was by design. I'm looking at his defensive stats, and he had like 4 clearances, 1 interception, 3 tackles, 0 dribbled past, which is great considering he's a right wing back.
He was playing a lot deeper than this game, and it was just not his responsibility to get forward.
And I think that really suited this team and kind of plugged some of the holes that we've witnessed in that 3-5-2 before. And kudos to him for staying back and doing his job, because he's an offensive-minded player who likes to create chances. So it's not easy to stick to the plan in that sense. And the second aspect of this, I think, the fact that the wingbacks were staying slightly deeper, that gave Diego Gomez the license to be that offensive player to push forward. And that's why I think we noticed that difference of him just taking the ball and running with it. Because I think he had the defensive security behind him with both Redondo and Sergio Busquets. And that gave him that initiative to just, you know, run with it. Even if he loses the ball, he has cover behind him. And that really affected the game. And I don't think Nashville was expecting someone like Diego Gomez to be that offensively strong in that sense.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think my thought was, if we have this, if we're going to play with a back three, but we have this setup where our fullbacks play a little bit deeper, I'm a lot more comfortable with it. And the fact that we still scored 3 goals against a really solid defensive team in Nashville, and we were still creating plenty of chances, it wasn't like it really hampered our offense. You know, Jordi Alba, even though he played a little bit more defensively, still knew when to get forward and to be a creator, and Gressel played a little bit farther back. I felt a lot more comfortable in that formation, in that setup, than I have when our fullbacks are playing basically as members of the attack. And so that was the biggest thing I noticed. To answer your question from a minute ago or so, I don't know if I'm more comfortable with it, because Nashville still created several half chances, and they were still putting themselves in position to create chances. And on the one hand, it's a testament to the back line that they didn't allow any really, really good chances. But I'm not sure a better team wouldn't have taken more advantage of that, because as we've mentioned plenty over the last week and a half, this Nashville team isn't a juggernaut offensively. So I felt better about the performance, similar to how I felt about it on Sunday against Montreal. But I'm not like convinced that I feel better about it moving forward. So that's my answer to that question. But yeah, I mean, you tell me your thoughts, because this is yours.
No, I completely agree with you. And I had the exact same thought as well. And if you want to go into the stats, Nashville had 55% possession compared to Miami's 45. They had a total of 15 shots, and they only had 3 shots on target. They had 4 shots blocked. So as you said, kudos to our backline for doing their job and for being present throughout. But if this was any other team, we might not have been this happy with the way the game had gone. And I think the fact that Nashville did not have much of a final third output really worked in our favor and allowed us to play this formation despite its challenges and issues that we faced. And I think I don't want listeners and fans to think that just because we've been able to get away with a 3-1 scoreline against Nashville, does it mean that we're now comfortable in the 3-5-2? And I am still very skeptical every time this shows up on the team sheet. So I'm glad you had a similar understanding of that. And despite the fact that Tata changed a few things tactically with the wing backs sitting back, I think we were still a little bit vulnerable. So hopefully we can change that going forward.
Yeah, two more thoughts on that. The back line played well, and I don't want to take away from that. I think this performance can go into DC this, you know, tomorrow and get a win. Like, Nashville is not atrocious. This is a performance that would get a win, or, you know, would allow one goal against 20 out of 30 or 29 MLS teams. But when we're talking about the big games, when we're talking about Monterrey, when we're talking about playing Columbus and some of those games, that's when I'm saying I'm not very comfortable with it yet. And the second aspect that I think really played well is that the midfield really played well, and they didn't turn the ball over in the midfield, which we've seen a lot. You know, we saw it a lot last season, and we've seen it a decent amount this year so far. And so I think this was the best performance from the midfield in any game this season, where they took care of the ball. When we did turn the ball over, because of course that's going to happen throughout a game, it was in Nashville's half. It wasn't giving Nashville opportunities to counter quickly. It wasn't playing into their game plan. It wasn't playing into their strengths. And like, to me, the 3-5-2 is going to look a lot better when the midfield plays like that. So I think that was another aspect of it, which was good.
Yeah, and just on that point, I think two players that stood out for me in a very reserved way, like, they weren't outstanding, they weren't exceptional, but I think they did really well without anyone noticing. Nicolas Freire, I think he's slowly really getting into this team, and go on, do you have some thoughts on that?
I don't think it was quiet. I think Freire was like, stood out to me, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Freire had a great game. And I think whenever he's in that back line, it just automatically looks a lot more organized than when it's Christophe and Avilés by themselves. And I think he's just going to get better from here. He's not the most quick defender, but I think he's just intelligent and his positioning is great. And I think he's complementing the current defenders that we have, which is a great sign. And then secondly, I think Redondo had a really good game. I think he's doing this thing where he's keeping it very simple, very basic, but he's just passing in the right directions. He's just keeping the momentum going, the flow of the game going, just ticking the ball. And he's like a metronome that you need in that position. And again, not outstanding. He had some issues. I think he had a few wayward passes here and there. But overall, I think that's another player that is slowly growing into this team. And I think he's just going to get better from here on.
Yeah, I think those are both great shout-outs. I agree, Freire. I thought Freire stood out in terms of his impact and in terms of being really solid defensively. And then I agree, I think this was Redondo's best game. He took care of the ball better. I think he's really getting into the flow of what it means to play in this league. And so I agree with both of those. Big picture question. We've seen this team beat Orlando City 5-0. We've seen them play just a dominant half against Real Salt Lake. But this performance was, you know, right up there. Where does this performance rank for you in terms of what we've seen from this team this season so far?
I think overall, in the grand scheme of things, this would be the best that we've looked in the 3-5-2. And for at least 60 minutes of this game out of the 90, this was the best that we'd played. The first 20 minutes was, I think, better than any game we played, better than the game we played against Orlando as well. Because I think that Orlando game, even though we scored early, we scored 5 goals, that was more about how poor Orlando was than how good Miami was. And I think this game was more about how good Miami was and how Nashville was not able to reach that level, at least to start the game. So I think the first 20 minutes, one of the best games we've played so far. Over the course of the 90 minutes, definitely the best we've looked in the 3-5-2.
Yeah, I agree. I think those first, I would even say the first 25 minutes, because that includes our second goal, up to and including the second goal. I thought this team was just phenomenal, the best we've seen so far this year. I don't even know what else to say. I mean, I think Toto Aviles was sort of the person I want to mention most clearly with that, because I thought his first 25 minutes were phenomenal. I think the rest of the game was maybe not as great, but he looked so dialed in. He looked so focused. He looked, you know, he knew that it was his responsibility to make sure Schaffelberg didn't score, and he was on top of that assignment. And that was sort of emblematic of the whole team, where they were dialed in, they were focused, and they really rose up to this big moment that they clearly felt like it needed and it deserved. And, you know, I don't know what it means that we went up 2-0 and that sort of fell off, but it's good to know that this team can play like that, because there's not a team in this region or in this league that will be able to withstand that type of performance for a sustained period of time. So that was really nice to see, and, you know, best 25 minutes of the season so far.
Yeah, and a shout out to Aviles as well. I think he's played every single minute this season. Or not every single minute, but he's played the maximum number of minutes this season, has he not?
Yeah, I can check it. He definitely came off early in the Montreal game, but
yeah.
I'm thinking other than that, he's come off there a few times. He's come off the field a few times this season so far against both Orlando City and Real Salt Lake. But yeah, I mean, he's been, you know, starting every game and going in deep into the second half in most of them.
Yeah, so
let's get into our individual awards. This is our part of the show where we like to talk about our players individually. We give out a Man of the Match award. We give out the Heron That Flew North award. This is our award for the player that wasn't doing the right things. And then we each come up with two individual awards that are, you know, sometimes to be named on the spot, but are our chance to flex our creativity and are really just a chance to talk about some players individually. Last week, you went first on the Man of the Match discussion, and I had to go first for the Heron That Flew North for the last game against Montreal. So we're going to switch it up this time, and I'm going to give the Man of the Match award for Inter Miami. And I personally couldn't make a decision between Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez. I think both had really good games. So I went to Twitter and asked a poll. And even though I think maybe that was a dangerous decision because of how many people love Lionel Messi out there, he did win. And so I'm going to give it to him based on that thought process. I thought he was really fast, really athletic in the first, in that first 20 minutes. He looked like he was as good as he's ever been at Inter Miami. So he gets my Man of the Match. What were your thoughts from him?
Again, I am nobody to talk about Lionel Messi, man. He's just phenomenal. He played 46 minutes and he still managed to be the best player on the pitch, or 49 minutes. But like, he's just so good. And every time he gets the ball, I'm like, okay, he's going to go in this direction. And he goes in a completely different direction. Every time he's passing the ball, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to pass to this player. And he just sees a completely different path that I didn't even think was possible. He's just phenomenal, man. The lesser I say, the better, because he's just great. And I agree with you that this is probably the game that he played in the first 25 minutes. I think he looked better than he has before in the Inter Miami shirt. So I think he's just only getting started, which is really exciting.
Yes. I think maybe we should talk about his injury just a minute. My initial thoughts is that when it happened, I thought, We already have this game in hand. He knows that. And so he's just trying to make sure he doesn't get hurt for international duty and that we weren't going to see him against DC. And while I was, you know, that's like a disappointing thought on the surface. We were just winning a really important game. So I was like, you know what, if you need that time off, go for it, because you helped us win this game. It doesn't sound like it's a super bad injury. I'd still expect him to play for Argentina next week, but he's not going to play against DC. Do you expect this to be a thing this year where we have to worry about his fragility? It's never really been a thing for him in his career, but it's not the first time since he got to Inter Miami.
Yeah, I'm not sure how true this is, but there was apparently a clause in his contract with PSG where it stated that he would prioritize all Argentina games over the PSG games. And I won't be surprised if he has that in his Inter Miami contract as well. And when I saw him come off in the early second half, I knew he was saving himself for the Argentina, for the international break. Like, the game was more or less done. I think this is going to be a trend going forward, where every time we have international games coming up, you might see Lionel Messi play fewer minutes. And I don't think his injury is as bad as people might be making it out to be. And I think it's just that he's been rested to make sure that he's fully fit for Argentina.
Yeah, the reason I think it's probably worth talking about is because last season he did get hurt. And we kind of thought it was just not a big deal until he started missing not just games, but important games. He missed that U.S. Open Cup final, which we could have really used him, especially in that first half. So I'm really weary about that, because, you know, this is the greatest player in the world playing on our team, and we want to see him play as much as possible. That doesn't take away from this performance. He had a goal. He had an assist. He was the reason that we go up 2-0 early and we kind of cruise control through this game and feel good early on. So I don't want to have that take away from how we feel about him, because as far as I can tell, he's as good as ever. And it's really fun to watch on my team. Okay. To you for the heron that flew north.
Oof.
And
this is a really hard one.
As a reminder, this is the Heron That Flew North Award. It's our award for the player that's not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Florida Herons, they don't travel during the winter, so they certainly don't fly north. So that's our sort of, player that struggled in this game award. And it's Sore's turn for this game to give it out, which I'm happy about.
I am not happy about that at all, because this is probably the worst game that I could have this award for. I'm going to be a bit of a cop-out and use statistics to to give my answer. And by that logic, I think it has to be Sergio Busquets. And to our regular viewers, I've already given this award to Sergio Busquets in the past before. And I promise I don't have anything personal against him. It's just that he was good. He was fine. He didn't do anything wrong, but he wasn't amazing either. And I feel like the midfield itself was really functional and they did their job really well. But with the way Messi and Suarez have been standing out, and even Alba in certain games, I think Sergio Busquets has yet to produce that this season, at least. And I'm just waiting for him to have one of those games where we're like, oh yes, this was the player that we saw at Barcelona. Of course, age is a factor. But yeah, I think it's harsh, man. It's a really harsh award, and I honestly don't want to give it to him. But I don't think any player for that matter played bad enough in this game. So yeah, it's just a jeopardy, I guess. Collateral damage.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't have given it to him, because I thought this was his best game in terms of taking care of the ball and helping this midfield be stable and not give up any turnover or, you know, transition opportunities for Nashville. So I think that is a little harsh. I think I would have given it to probably David Ruiz, because, you know, he played 8 whole minutes and didn't score a single goal. I mean, that's tough, you know.
See, I wasn't even considering the substitute. So, that's on me. I should have probably,
Campana up, 7 whole minutes on the pitch, up 3-0. You don't score a single goal. Yeah, I mean,
I agree.
Yeah.
Maybe even Drake Callender, man. He should have had that clean sheet. Didn't save it.
Yeah. Drake should have scored his own goal. But anyways, okay, our first award, and I actually planned them out this time, but I'm calling this one the S&P 500 award. Who is it?
Oh.
Steve Munoz gets it.
Yeah, of course. The S&P 500, a package of everything. Is this Luis Suarez?
This is not Luis Suarez. This Ooh. One goes to Diego Gomez because his stock is rising.
He's rising. There you go.
He was great in this game. He had an assist where he demonstrated some final third product that we haven't seen a lot from him. The great assist to Messi in the 23rd minute. I really wanted to mention that 69th minute run where he kind of takes it down the sideline, goes in and out of the defense, and then makes a phenomenal pass, a nice cross to, I think it was with his weak foot to Luis Suarez to create another opportunity. He has been incredible. He's so dynamic. He's a menace in the midfield for opposing defenses. He's been incredible this season, especially considering what we saw last year. He came off that pre-Olympic tournament in South America with a ton of confidence. He has been a locked-in starter. I mean, that was a controversial sort of decision to start him in the first week of the season, especially after David Ruiz had a nice goal in Saudi Arabia. And now it's not even a question. He's locked in.
Yeah, I wouldn't call him an S&P 500, man. S&P 500 is reliable, stable, secure, not growing at a higher rate. Diego Gomez is shooting up. I don't know what they fed him during the pre-Olympics, but he's just come out as a different player. He is dialed in. If you saw the replay to that run that he made for the pass to Messi, he was so focused and he looked like a bull running through everybody. And it's phenomenal to see a young player like him do that, because I think that's a sign of someone who's confident in his abilities, and that's a sign of someone who is not afraid to, you know, just take the initiative and make something happen by himself. So I completely agree with you. I think this was one of the games where we're going to look back at and be like, yeah, this is where it all started for him at Inter Miami. And also, I think this is now a benchmark. He needs to look back at this performance and know that A, he's capable of this, but just emulate more of these performances going forward, because I think the only way for him is up, and may he continue with these performances.
Yeah. And it wasn't just this game. He's been really good all season. I think maybe the game he came off the bench was his worst performance, but he's been great. And we talked in the preseason a lot about how he needed to be consistent and precise and not have those sort of silly turnovers where he has a guy open, but he just doesn't put enough, you know, weight on the ball, or he puts too much weight on the ball, or he shoots it on target instead of 10 yards over, or, you know, something like that, putting the ball 2 yards wide when he has an opportunity in the box. He's doing those things. He still had a few missed opportunities that could have made his stat line look even better, but he's playing so well. He is, I think he's playing himself, and I put this on Twitter yesterday, maybe this morning, that he's playing himself into a transfer next January to a top five league in Europe, and, you know, $10, $15 million transfer fee, because he's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he's a menace in the midfield. He isn't going to be physically limited in any of those leagues. You know, this is a guy that you can see playing in the Premier League, and you know, he needs to be a little bit better. He needs to develop a little more to get there, or to be, you know, good there. But you can see the tools, and you can see how a club in the Premier League or in Germany would like everything they're seeing about him right now and would want to bring him in and sort of be part of that development process. So he's sort of, it feels like he's playing himself out of an Inter Miami uniform and out of the Inter Miami long-term plans. Now, he's not going anywhere this season because Inter Miami wants to win this year, but it's really cool to see for the kid. And, you know, he's a kid that a lot of people didn't love his performance last season. So it's just awesome.
Yeah. And I just want to add that up until this game, we saw a lot of his defensive mindset and how good he was at breaking the play and in the midfield being a bit of a disruptor. But I think this game was where he just brought it all together and we saw his offensive output. And I think the only thing that needs to be done on his part is just be a bit more consistent and continue on from here. So let's hope this is not the best of Diego Gomez that we've seen, and there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, we have talked over the last week or so about how Redondo, his transfer fee kind of dictates him being an impact player in this league. And obviously Busquets, Alba, and Messi and Suarez are impact players. I think we both agree Drake Callender has that in him, you know, on any given day to be a difference maker. But Diego Gomez is putting himself on that tier, at least in my opinion. Okay, enough about Gomez. Let's hear your first award, and let's see what you got.
So my first award is the award for the king of all trades. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Not the jack, but the king of all trades.
The king of all trades. I don't think Inter Miami even traded for anyone since.
No, this is a saying. This is a saying which means jack of all trades, king of none. Okay. And I've changed that to king of all trades because this player is just good at everything in the book.
I think it's jack of all trades, master of none, which has thrown me off.
But I've changed it to king of all trades. Yeah.
I'm guessing Luis Suarez.
Correct. You finally got one. Very well done.
He had to be talked about, so it just made sense.
And not just in terms of how he's doing as a player, but I just want to take this opportunity to, you know what, mock everybody who said that this is a player who's finished. Well, shame on you, and guess who's laughing now? Because this guy has the most number of goals and assists in the entire MLS up until this point, which is insane given how bad his preseason was. So talk to me about Luis Suarez.
Listen, I was always positive on him. I told you every time that he was going to come good and that we weren't even going to believe that he was, you know, as good as he is. He's even better than I was expecting. I'm just looking at his stats right now. 4 goals, 5 assists in 6 games. He's got 1.97, basically 2 goal contributions per 90. That means that he's responsible for 2 goals every game, which is just ridiculous. I mean, he's so good. He's outpacing Messi in even those stats. He's a dynamic playmaker. When you get the ball at his feet, he can set up his teammates. He can put in great crosses. He can finish. He's making such a big difference to this team. It's incredible. Like I said, I could have raved about him in the man of the match discussion because I maybe would have given it to him if I hadn't done that Twitter poll, but he's been so good. He was so good in this game. He gets the early goal, no fear, no hesitation, right between the keeper's legs. He's been phenomenal, man. I loved it.
Yeah, as much as I don't like Suarez because of his history, I think he's playing fantastic. I think he silences critics, obviously, but I think he's showing a lot more than what people expected of him. And just some of his interplay and running off the ball and just the spaces and the position that he finds himself in, it's a natural, you know, instinct that's basically taking him this far. Honestly, I don't think he has the physicality or the legs to perform like this throughout the course of the season. And we might see a little bit of a dip for him sometime, you know, mid-season. But even then, I think he's just been phenomenal. Yeah,
I'm very encouraged.
I am as well, and I've really liked what I see. And he could have had 2 goals in this game, so he could have scored that Diego Gomez chance that was created, and I think he shot it over the bar. But he just finds himself in the right positions. He's always available, and in the preseason, I remember talking about how he always seems like a step behind. Now he just seems like a step ahead of everybody else. And the first goal was the perfect example of that. Like, as soon as he dragged McNaughton out of position, he knew exactly what he wanted to do. And thankfully, he had someone like a Messi on the ball who knew what Suarez wanted to do as well. So, yeah, it's just really good seeing him play football right now. And as I said with Diego Gomez, long may this continue with Luis Suarez, because if he continues in this form consistently over the course of the season, nothing can stop this team. So,
yeah, I think the reason I was so confident was because I remember Gonzalo Higuain and how he just turned it on when he got the right pieces around him. And Luis Suarez is 2 levels above what Higuain was, and he's just demonstrated. It's taken him, you know, he scored in the first game, but I don't know if he looked great. But by game, you know, by that Orlando City game, he was on fire. He scored, I think, 43. He had 43 goal contributions last year in Brazil, 27 goals, 16 assists. I'm hoping my quick math is right there, 43. Do you think he's going to pass that for this team? Do you think, like, 20 goals, 18 assists, 20 assists? I mean, he's on pace to smash both of those.
How many goals does he have now? 4?
4 goals, 5 assists through 6 games.
Why does it feel like he has more goals? It just feels like he scored a lot more goals. But anyways, I think with the chances that are being created for him and how he's constantly involved in the attacks, I won't be surprised if he continues on with this. But again, I won't hold it against him if he doesn't continue this pace and has a bit of a drop off at some point during the season. Because he's obviously not the same player that he was a few years ago, but I could be wrong.
Those are bold words, man. Yeah. A lot of people have said similar things like that in the last couple of weeks and have been proven wrong. So be careful. I'm a huge Leo Campana fan. I really am. I mean, I think he's I think he's a top 10 striker in terms of his talent in this league. I think he would be a guy that could threaten 20 goals if he was a full on starter in this league. But I don't know how much he's going to play this year because Suarez is just, you can't not play him if he's ready to go. You just can't. He's that good. Okay. My second award, my last award is, and I did write this down and you didn't steal it this time, which is nice. I'm going with the Air Jordan Award.
Robert Taylor, because he flew.
Robert
for
Taylor. Robert
he stole
Taylor,
my
man.
Second one this time.
Robert Taylor, just it reminds me why these guys are professional athletes and I'm not, because he jumps, he floats there for 4 seconds, 5 seconds, and then just waits for the ball to hit him perfectly. You know, perfect header into the corner, great goal, ends the tie, right? Puts that game away. He's been so good. He comes off the bench, he makes a difference. He starts, he makes a difference. He's got good chemistry with Messi. He's got good chemistry with Campana. He's got good chemistry with Luis Suarez. He is such an impactful player, and it's really awesome. We saw that he got his 82nd appearance with Inter Miami, which ties the all-time record with Yedlin and Victor Ulloa. Hopefully that's not a sign he's about to get traded before tomorrow, but it's not. But I mean, it was a big moment for him. His 14th goal with Inter Miami, 27th goal contribution. Go ahead. Talk to me about him.
I need someone to put up a Twitter compilation of the Montreal game with his header chance and this game with his header chance, because it felt like I was watching the exact same thing, but just with a different result. The ball from Suarez was absolutely peach. It landed exactly where it was supposed to. But how does Robert Taylor always find himself in such spaces when nobody's around him? Like, he finds himself consistently in the right positions, which is such a good sign for an attacking player. And his header was phenomenal. Like, what a great header. Perfectly guided into the corner. I don't think the keeper could have done anything about it. And you know what? For his 82nd appearance, absolutely well-deserved. And this is one of the players where if he starts, if he comes off the bench, you know exactly what you're getting. And coaches love such players because he will give his 100% when he's on the pitch. And he can change the game, you know, by just taking it by the scruff of his neck and doing something phenomenal. So this time around, he was the goal scorer. Another game, he's going to be the creator. So there's just a lot in his game to love as a Miami fan. And for the OG fans, this is one of the ones that you root for every time he's on the pitch, right? So he's one of Miami's own. So I absolutely, I don't know what the hell is happening, but I like it. That just proves what my thoughts for Robert Taylor are.
Yeah. I just looked it up. Since the beginning of 2023, the beginning of last season, he has 20 goal contributions for this team. That's, I believe, 11 goals, 9 assists. If you think about Inter Miami and you name their best players, right? You obviously have Messi, Suarez, Busquets, Alba, Drake Callender. You know, we talked about Diego Gomez pushing himself into that tier. Robert Taylor is not one of those top five names. And yet this is a player with 20 goal contributions over the last 13 months for this team. It's incredible. He's so good. I just, you know, like you said, as a fan, you know, for a long time, it's really awesome to see a guy like Robert Taylor be part of this new era where we have so much success. I just love every minute of it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. He's one of my favorite players on the team. Like, I love watching him play. He's so dynamic. He's so unselfish at times as well. And he does what the team demands of him. And yeah, I can sing praises of him for the rest of the 2 hours that we sit here, but we all know how good of a player he is. So good for him for getting that goal.
Yeah, and Steve here thinking that Taylor would have been traded if Facundo Farias didn't get injured. That would have been a disaster. It would have made me so sad. That would have been worse than the Kamal Miller trade for sure. Anyways, I think that's enough about Robert Taylor because, like you said, we could keep going on. Your last award, who is it?
My last award was something else, but you stole it. So now I need to figure out another one. So I'm going to come up with a different one. And I'm going to call this the Pink Wall of Miami. And it's for you to decide who this is.
The Pink Wall of Miami. Drake Callender?
I will give it to the whole back line, including Drake Callender. I think...
No, one player.
For this game. Ugh.
One player.
Okay, I would give it to Kristoff.
Okay.
I think
he played well.
I think he had a bad game against Montreal. He shrugged that off, and he had a very good game against Nashville. I think he was one of the reasons that we looked so steady in the back today. And yeah, I think he just had a really good game. I don't want to analyze his game too much, but just wanted to say that he deserves a mention because I think he played well, and he brushed that Montreal disaster that happened. So good for him.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Monterey tie in a few minutes, but... I think his experience and his discipline and his stability, I know he's not the most athletic player, but I think that's really important. And I mentioned this a little bit over the last couple of podcasts, but I think he's actually a little bit quicker than he was last season for us, at least in the second half. And I went back to that knee injury he had early in the season where, you know, maybe since that he never really recovered, but he looks just a step quicker than he did last season. Not that he's athletic by any means, but having that, I think, really is nice. And the fact that he has the type of experience he has in the Champions League and all that, I think that's going to play really well when we go deeper into this tournament, if he, you know, is still a starter when we might switch to a back four. Anyone else you want to mention in terms of individual performances? I mean, we talked about Freire a little bit. We talked about Redondo, Thomas Ovilas.
We haven't mentioned Alba.
We didn't mention Alba. You have anything you want to mention?
No, I just think I didn't even notice him much throughout the game, which is a good sign, I guess, because, you know, he did his job. He didn't need to be involved in the offense, but I think it was just by the nature of the way this team was set up to play. I think he was expected to be a bit more defensive in this game. So yeah, not much to say there. I think the entire backline had a good performance, not the best, but a good performance. So, and Alba was a part of that.
Yeah, you know, we talked about in the tactics, I think his role was to play a little bit more defensively this time. I mean, he played deeper than Noah Allen played in the first leg. And but he knows when to get forward. He knows, you know, he's still part of the offense when, you know, when especially in that first half. So, yeah, I mean, not much to say, but it was good to have him back. We saw how big of a difference maker he can be against Montreal. So, yeah. Let's talk about this tournament going forward. We found out on Thursday night that we are going to be playing Monterrey. That first game will be in, not Dry Pink, but Chase Stadium. That game is going to be April 3rd at Chase. And then the week later on the 10th, we'll be going to Monterrey to play at BBVA Stadium. What are your initial thoughts on this tie and this upcoming quarterfinal?
We're gonna have to be at our very best to beat this Monterrey team across both games. I think the toughest tie that we could have got, I would have preferred if Cincinnati had come through. But I've been doing a little bit of research into Monterrey. I think we can beat them. We're just gonna have to take our chances. Cincinnati didn't take their chances, and that's why the first leg cost them. And I think the most important game will be the home game. And we need to score as many past them as we can so that when we go to Mexico, we are not under as much pressure. Because if we go to Mexico with like a draw score line or up by one goal, that won't be the best. So I'm worried about this game. Of course, I'm nervous, but I do think this team has enough if it plays to its full potential, because boy, do we need to play to our full potential to win that game.
This Monterrey team is, I think a lot of people think, is the best team in Mexico. I'm not going to pretend like I watch a lot of Liga MX, but they are at the top of the table, the Clausura right now. They're one of the powerhouses of Mexican soccer. Those powerhouse teams in Mexico don't always find their way into this tournament, but it seems like this year they all did. Club America, Pachuca, they're all in this tournament, and it's not going to be easy going for Tigres as well. As far as Monterrey, Inter Miami is going to have to be, like you mentioned, on their A game, especially at home. That game is going to be everything, because if they don't get a serious win, they're not going to go through. If they draw that game, they're not going to go through. Playing in Mexico is such a different experience, and I know Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez have played in CONMEBOL, which is similar, you know, probably even more intense. But you know, it's going to be such a different environment than anything we would see in MLS, that not having that lead and that comfort going into it is going to be really scary, and I don't think we're going to be able to come back with it. I want to talk about how Inter Miami matches up with Monterrey, though, because I've watched them play against Cincinnati. Cincinnati is a much more defensive team. They have that back line with Miles Robinson, Ian Murphy, and his name's escaping me. But they lost Brandon Vasquez. They still have Lucho Acosta, but Bupenza kind of cost them some opportunities, especially in that first game. They're a team that was trying to be solid defensively and shut Monterrey out, and that just wasn't going to work, because Monterrey, they have too much quality up front, where when you give them chances, they're going to finish. That's very scary against what we've been throwing out there, because, you know, our defense isn't top class in MLS. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that sort of dynamic?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things that I'm thinking about. A, there's still time to the first game, so we might get a few players back. I think we're going to get the right back in. Chelo is going to fit in, so he might play that game. We might be playing the 4-3-3, which we've looked better in. So I think between now and the game against Monterrey, there's a few things that can work out, and we'll see how we set up and how things go. And the second is, you know what, it's a dangerous team to play against, but I'd rather play against the best teams, beat the best teams, and then get to the final and win the final. So we would have had to go through them at one point anyways. So if this is the test, then I think we just got to face it, and hopefully Inter Miami can come out on top.
You know, Taylor Twellman has announced all of our MLS games this year, and he constantly says ridiculous things like they should have put up 5 goals against Miami. But because, you know, MLS teams don't get 5 chances and finish 5 chances. That's just not the talent that exists in the MLS. That might be the case with Monterrey, because those players are really good. So Inter Miami defensively can't collapse like we've seen some other teams, MLS teams, do against these Mexican clubs, particularly Philadelphia. The midfield has to be really solid, because these Mexican midfields are going to be really good. But to me, the big difference between Inter Miami and what Cincinnati did, what Philadelphia did, what Orlando City did when they all lost, is that, and I know it's obvious to say, but we have the sort of attacking power to outscore these Liga MX clubs, and those teams just didn't. I know it's easy to say Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez are going to be the difference makers, but I think we're going to have to score 4, 5, 6 goals over 2 legs in order to advance, because I don't think our defense is going to shut them out. So it feels good to have those guys knowing that you're going to need 4, 5, 6 goals, but we're still going to need those goals. And, you know, missing a Lionel Messi could be the difference, even if he's only gone for 1 game.
Yeah, and hopefully our players hit the right form at the right time. But again, I don't want to get too much into it, because the game's still a while away. We don't know if there's going to be any injuries or what the issue is going to be. And we're going to do a full breakdown anyway, so...
I'm so into it. I tweeted so much today about this game, about this tie, because I'm nervous already, man. I'm so excited,
I'm not even thinking about it. There's too much time. But it's going to be a fantastic game, though. It's going to be a fantastic tie. I'm actually really excited for the away leg because I want to see how this Inter Miami team plays under pressure because it's a whole other test. So a lot of things to look forward to.
I'm nervous in all the wrong ways. Just a general update about the tournament. They are in the quarterfinals. Inter Miami is going to play Monterrey. Tigres, which is another Liga MX club, is going to play the Columbus Crew. The Crew is the MLS Cup champions, defending MLS Cup champions. I think these are the two teams that MLS really loves that they're still in the tournament and thinks they give them the best chance to win this tournament. But Monterrey and Tigres will be no joke. That's one side of the bracket. The other side is Pachuca versus Herediano, which is a Costa Rican club. Pachuca, also a Liga MX club. And then Club America versus the New England Revolution, the last MLS team still in it. I don't even think Revolution fans think that they have a big chance against Club America, but that side of the bracket is a lot easier than what we have. I mean, Miami, Monterrey, Tigres, and the Columbus Crew is about as daunting as it gets. But like you said, you know, if you want to be the best, if you want to win, you're going to have to go through the best. And that's exactly what Inter Miami is going to have to do. I know we're playing DC United tomorrow. We play New York Red Bulls next week. We play NYCFC coming up. But I mean, bringing in Wiegand, bringing in Chelo, bringing in Matias Rojas, getting situated with our formation and making sure that back line is comfortable and making sure that they don't leak goals. It's all building up to that.
Forgetting Yannick Bright.
Yannick Bright as well. Although I don't know if he's going to play against Monterrey. But I mean, it feels like everything now is gearing towards, I know we have the international break coming up, but for the guys that are going to be here, everything's gearing towards that moment. At least in my head it is. I don't know if the team's actually feels that way.
Yeah, I think with a team like Inter Miami, when the expectations are so high at the start of the season, it can sometimes just fall flat. And the one good thing has been that the trajectory of this team has been steadily moving upwards. And this is away from Messi and Alba and Busquets. I think just generally this team as a whole seems to be coming together. And I'm hoping that by the time we get to that Monterrey game, we're going to be looking at our finest. Like, we're going to be in top form. And I mean, every single player is going to be looking good. So again, there's time to that game. We've got a few games ahead of that. We've got the DC game tomorrow. We're going to be previewing that tomorrow before the game starts. So I'd rather focus on that than the Monterrey game.
One big question. Yes or no? Right now, how do you feel about this team winning this tournament, the CCC? Yes or no?
No.
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Can they win this tournament? Yes or no? With the team we have right now? Yes. Do you think so?
Yeah.
I agree, especially if they can play with that sort of focus and sharpness that they had on Wednesday night. We're getting close to 90 minutes here, so let's wrap it up. Like you just mentioned, we do our pregame show in the hour before kickoff. So if you aren't going to the game, and I know it's a road game, join us on YouTube and on Twitter in the hour before the game. We'd love to get you guys in the comments section and have it be more interactive. The game starts at 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, so we'll be on at 1 p.m. Eastern, kind of going over the game, giving a preview, giving predictions, doing a real preview show. And we always get nervous in the hour before the game, so it's always fun for us to talk it out and to have some something going on that's Inter Miami related, not just twiddling our thumbs. So if that's something you want in the hour before the game, come join us. Other than that, I've been Scotty. This is Soar, and we'll see you tomorrow.